sure that the physical environment that we have in the building is conducive to preserving them. So Jeannie Drews is responsible for that important part of our operation. Appropriately enough, she also has a longtime interest in handmade books. She has studied bookbinding at the Penland School of Craft. She has also taught a number of short courses on making books by hand. She has also visited Cuba a number of times and visited the artists of the Ediciones Vigia Collective. And so this afternoon she's going to talk to us about their work, about her interactions with them. So please welcome Jeannie Drews.
Thank you, Ruthann. I thought I would start our talk today with a book that I put up, and I'd like to read you a little quote from this. It's by Borges, and the title of the book is called Lost Paradises. And in the opening piece, which is called Possessing Yesterday, the blind Borges says, "I know that I have lost so many things I could not count them, and that those losses now are what are mine. I know that I have lost yellow and black, and that I think about those impossible colors in a way that those who see do not think. Only what has died is ours. Only what we lost is ours. The only paradises are the lost paradises." And I think this is a particularly apt quote for Cuba because, of course, Cuba, a little over 40 years ago, we started the embargo with Cuba and the revolution. And there are things in Cuba that have been lost. There are things that have been gained. And I've been very fortunate to be able to travel to Cuba to work on preservation projects and also to meet the book artists of Ediciones Vigia. This is one of the books that is in the collection. I've donated 70, 80 titles to special collections so that people in the MSU community can research these books and look at them. So let's look at a little bit of Cuba. This is a scene, I took this scene from a bridge that is the dividing halfway between Matanzas, which is where Ediciones Vigia is, and Havana, which is the capital. As you can see, it's very lush countryside. It is a tropical climate. They grow bananas and all sorts of fruits and raise lots of pigs and cattle. And in Matanzas is about 2-hour drive from Havana, and it's about halfway between Havana and Varadero, which is the finest beaches in all of Cuba, and where a huge tourist community, or not, yeah, huge tourist is. You may have heard the story about Elian, the little boy. His father was from Cardenas, which is not too far from Matanzas. Ediciones Vigia, then, is on the way as tourists go from Havana, which is where most people fly in, and then they go on to Varadero to go to the beaches, and they often stop in Matanzas. And there is this book cooperative, Ediciones Vigia, and they sell their books to the tourists or to Cubans, whoever wants to pay dollars for them. In Cuba, there are two currencies. There's the Cuban peso and then the American dollars. And while Americans are not supposed to travel to Cuba, in fact, there is quite a large tourist industry in Cuba, mostly from Europe and Canadians, also other countries in Latin America. And all of those people have to exchange their currency for U.S. dollars to use those U.S. dollars in Cuba. Ediciones Vigia started in 1985. In 1985, the Soviet Union was still supporting Cuba in many, many ways, bringing lots of materials into the island. Because it is an island culture, anything that they can't produce on the island does have to be shipped in. And because they're only 90 miles off our shore, the embargo makes it much more difficult for them to bring in materials. You can imagine how much further it is to bring materials from Europe or from the Soviet Union. Now, in 1985, the publishing industry in Cuba was fairly healthy. Most of publishing happens through the government because it is a communist country, and so they control the publishing. But Ediciones Vigia started in 85 when there still were materials that could be had for publishing, but they decided they wanted to do it differently. They didn't want to be controlled by the government. They wanted to be able to publish what they wanted to publish, which was mostly fiction or research, and also children's books. And they wanted to be able to publish this without the assistance of the government because they didn't want to have to abide by any particular rules of the government. And so what they did was they used recycled materials, throwaway materials, so that they didn't have to rely upon the government for these for paper. And this stood them in very good stead, because in the late 80s, early 90s, what Cuba calls the special period, that is, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, there was no more support for Cuba from the Soviet Union. They had their own problems to take care of, all of the various countries that were created with the breakup. And so the Cubans now had what they called the special period. And what the special period was a tightening of everyone's belt. There was now not the support from the Soviet Union, and so food became much harder to get a hold of. And many, many staples became harder to get a hold of. And one of the staples that was hard to get a hold of was paper. But Ediciones Vigía, because they were using recycled materials, throwaway materials, they were able to continue publishing. And in fact, in some years, in the early 90s, they published more than the government. So this is the entranceway into Vigía. They have a two-story building that's an old colonial house. And on the first floor, they have a salon where they sell their books. And you can see the cash register there and their books behind them that they have for sale. And many of those books we have here in our special collections. And then on the other slide, you see it's almost like a reliquary. They get different cards and pieces that people who have bought their books send to them or give to them. And they put them in this showcase to show these materials that people have sent to them. This is, these are some of the people who work at Ediciones Vigía. There are about anywhere from a dozen to 15 people who work. They come and go as they get other jobs or as they find other things to do. Ariel, the young gentleman who you see on the right, is the illustrator for many, the artist for many of the books, and he was there signing one of the books for me that I had purchased, and I asked him to sign the books where he had been illustrator, and he was very pleased to be asked to do that, because I guess mostly when people buy the books, they don't think about that. Lara is the lady on the left there. She works at the cooperative, but her son, who at that time was 12 years old, he was the artist for some of the children's books. And so I asked her, her son was not there, but I asked her to sign for her son on those books where he had done the illustration. Now the slide that you see on the left is actually on the second floor, and that's the work area. They have these tables set up, and people sit around the tables. And what you see on those shelves there are all the different materials that they've gotten that are throwaway things from various and sundry places. Matanzas is known, in the 19th century, was known as the Athens of Cuba, because there was much literary publication that was done there. Many poets came from that area, and so it's very fitting that that this book cooperative continues in the same place. It's also a place where there is sugarcane, a lot of sugarcane production, and much of the paper. There's also paper production in Matanzas, and they use the refuse from the sugarcane production to make paper. And the name of that paper is called bagasse. It's not a very good paper. It's a brown paper, and you'll see this in the books that I have here. It doesn't have good fold strength, which is one thing in preservation. We like to have good fold strength for paper so that it will last a long time. And unfortunately, bagasse doesn't, because very short fibers. So the books are not real strong because the paper is weak. In addition, the Ediciones Vigía, while they are book artists, they're not really book binders. What they are artists and authors and poets and puppeteers and playwrights, and they publish their books in order to be able to express their ideas and also to be able to see in print the creation of the young artists in Cuba who otherwise would not be able to be published. Let's look at the next slide. So here's the first book I want to show you. Actually, the second one, because I already showed you the first one. This is called The Fish's Testament. And this is not a book, unfortunately, that we own here at MSU or that I own. This belongs to a conservator named Erin Loftus. She traveled with me in 1998 when I first traveled to Cuba. And this was the last one of this particular edition. They make editions of about 200. But for this one, which is a cigar box and then a book inside a cigar box, it was a more limited edition. I think there were fewer than 100. And she got the last one. This one of these is also in the Library of Congress. This was the the volume was written, the Fish's Testament was written by an author who was born in Cuba in 1918 and is purported to be the most important author in Cuba at that time. And it's about cigars and tobacco and the tobacco culture of Cuba. And if we look at the next one, you can see there's a little cigar box. And according to the preface of the book, the original editions had real cigars in them. This one did not. But you can see the amount of detail. Most of these books are, as I said, they're produced in editions of 200. And what they do is they have a model. They're designed by one of the artists and then whoever's writing it or whoever is editing it. And they work together and they create one model. And from that one model, everyone then works assembly line style to try and make the 200 edition. And they try and make them as much alike as they can. What that means is that you sit at a table and you cut out 200 of this piece, or you glue on 200 of that piece, and you do it all in assembly line so that they all stay alike as much as possible. You look at the model and you see how something is positioned on the model, and then you try and repeat that for 200 times for whatever it is that you're doing. Let's look at the next one. This is an edition of Revista. This is a quarterly journal that is published by Ediciones. And this is one from the rainy season. This was actually a double edition during the rainy season. And you can see that idea of the rain coming down with this gauze. And then I've lifted up that so that you can see in the umbrella. Now, on the umbrella, you can see the different pieces. I'll use this. Those are all glued on separately, cut out and glued on, each one of those panels on the umbrella. That umbrella is actually a little stick. It's a little teeny tiny dowel rod that's been colored red and then put on, obviously, right through the arm there. So you can imagine each one of these leaves is a separate cutout from colored paper and is glued on separately. So you can imagine the amount of work that goes into making one of these, much less 200 of them. And they sell for anywhere from $1 to $25 in Cuba. Now, $25 American dollars in Cuba is a substantial amount of money. They use this money when they work. They don't get paid for their work. They get paid in books. And depending upon how much time, if they're an assembler, that is, if they're one of the people who are gluing together all of these pieces and putting together the text, they might get one book. Then they can take that book and sell it to a tourist or to whomever they might want to, and that's how they get paid. If you're the artist, you might get three or four. If you're the author, you might get four or five. For the books that are sold within Ediciones Vigía, that money goes back into buying more materials and buying supplies. They have a copier machine. That's about 20 years old. It's before drum technology of copiers. So even before laser technology, which is the way copiers work now, was drum technology. And before that was a chemical technology. And that's the kind of copiers that they have. It's about 20 years old, and it came from the Soviet Union. Let's look at the next one. This is the inside of that book. And I call this talk Words in a Frame because every time, any interior of the book always has art that frames the words. And they really are, it's where I got that title for the talk, because every piece of text has some artistic piece that is then repeated for the pages. And notice down here, this little lantern that's colored with red, that's been hand-colored, again, 200 times. And that lantern is, in fact, the logo, the symbol for Ediciones Vigía. Vigía means watchtower or lantern. And their building looks out onto a square that is called Vigía Square. And so hence they took their name. Let's look at another one. This is a piece called a banner that is inside this edition. And it pulls out and opens out. I didn't bring any of the banners up, but you can see some of them. They usually have a poem on them. Sometimes this one. Ooh, that one's backwards, John. I didn't realize that. It's Edna St. Vincent Millay is the poem. So it's not just the slides backwards, as I realize now. They don't just publish Cuban authors. They also publish American authors and Latin American authors, sometimes Swedish authors, and I'll show you one of that's been translated into Spanish from the Swedish. So they find materials, anything that they want to publish, that they either get permission to do the translation or that they have. They also have contests in Cuba, and the prize for the best young poet or something like that is that they get their works published. And I'll show you a piece a little bit later on from that. This is another of the revistas that we have here in this collection. And again, you can just look at the detail and the amount of work that they do. They use stencils to do most of their artwork, and then they use a mimeograph machine to do the ink stencil. And that's actually what you're seeing here for any of these. This brown paper is the bagasse paper that I was telling you about. It is used for wrapping. It's not used for printing, except for exercise books for children. But mostly it's used for wrapping. And they get ends of the rolls at the paper factories and use them then to make their books. I said that they weren't bookbinders, and the reason I said that is because the books really don't open very well. They side-staple all of their books. They have an old stapler, and they side-staple all of the books so that they don't open real well. That's not the thing that is of importance to them. The thing that is of importance to them is the design and being able to publish their work. Let's go to the next one. This is a wonderful one. This is a catalog called Dance with Fire, which is an exhibition of an artist. And the artist's work was shown in Veradero, this tourist community that I was telling you about. And this was the catalog from that. And this book is particularly true of not being able to open. You can see the ties here are twine, are really stiff sessile twine. And you can't actually open the book unless you were actually to damage it. So this one doesn't open, but it is a catalog of all of her sculptural works from this show. This is the Borges book that I showed you in the beginning. It's quite a wonderful one, and I'm very happy that it's in this collection. In the center of the front page, you can see how the face here then opens out to see the sadness because of the blindness and all that he has lost. Which I think is very particularly appropriate for Cuba and all that they have lost. Let's look at the next one, and you can see this is a wonderful little book called Diary of a Cabin Boy, and it tells these wonderful adventures of being at sea and a storm, and how the cabin boy is always the heroic character. And towards the end of this story, you realize that this is just a daydream of this little boy. He wasn't really a cabin boy, and they weren't really out at sea. It's a wonderful little story. You can see here on the front where they've taken this yarn to make the mast and the tie of the mast. So again, all of this little detail. Right here where you can see this little bit of brown that goes around that, they've actually they've torn out another layer of paper and glued that down and then glued the title on to give it that look. They actually want to have the look of a manuscript. They want it to look handmade. It will be very interesting to see as they get more technology how these editions change. But for right now, they have been very happy with making them look. I mean, they want them to look handmade. They are handmade, but they also want them to look that. They're not trying to disguise that. Let's look at the next one. This is another wonderful book that, again, I don't have in our collection. This is called Unforeseen Nectar. And you can see the fan there. And on this fan is a poem. And it's about a lady, an older lady, who in the fall she's going out to look at her garden. And she sees a bee looking for flowers, and of course the flowers are all finished blooming. And so she talks to the bee and talks to about how in the poet's rose garden is that this bee is persevering even in the twilight of the garden, in the same way that she is seeing her own life in the twilight because she's older now. This belongs in a private collection, Joanne Cavanaugh, who is a journalist who traveled with me in Cuba, and she was able to buy this. This is also, there's a copy of this also in the Library of Congress. Next one. And this is the inside of that same book. I wanted to show you this vellum where they've done the with the ladies. It's really quite a lovely one. I keep looking for one to add to this collection. I may find one. This is a book that's been translated from the Swedish, and I it's about trees and all the branches of the trees. Now you'll see this sickle here that doesn't have anything to do with communism. That is a symbol for death. In other places, the Ediciones Vigía does not write about anything political. They are pretty careful about that. And so far, the government has left them alone to allow them to do this, to continue doing this publishing. But this is one that we have in our collection, and this is it's a wonderful piece. You can see this, the seeds here. They've got some seeds here, and they've used sand to decorate the cover of this book. And see this little latch here that fits around that that fence, and it will hold the book closed, so it's a little attachment. That is actually twine that's around that sickle. And this book that this fellow is holding opens up, and there's a little bit of text inside that book. So lots and lots of detail. Now, artist books in the United States, this would not be an unusual thing for an artist to make for an artist book to have this much detail, but they wouldn't do editions of 200. So this, I think, is part of what it makes this group so extraordinary. Look at the next one. And this is the inside of that same book. And again, you're seeing the detail there with the art that goes around the text. Let's look at another one. And these are two books that are scholarly books. One is on Spanish authors of the 15th, 16th century in Spanish, and the Pietro San Pietro, the stone on stone, is translations from Austrian. So they have the Austrian language on one side, the German language, and then they have the Spanish translation. And then the other one is 15th century Spanish authors. And again, you see the artwork on the inside, and they match the covers. This is one of the banners, freestanding banners, and there are several of those in the collection. I didn't bring any of those up. This one is about Daphne, you know, who's running away from, and she gets turned into a tree, the classical myth, and that's what the story is here. And you can see this this marbling effect with the green, so that they look like they're underwater. And this little quiver here has a little arrow that's been added on. One of the things that is particularly exceptional, I think, about these artists is their focus on detail, and to make the art and the words all fit together, and they work very hard to do that. This is one of the publications I was telling you about. This is a young poet, and the prize, it's called a Rilke Prize. They love Rilke down in Cuba, and so they have what they call the Rilke Prize, and it is not Rilke poetry, but it is the poetry of some young poet in Cuba who has won the award, and their prize is to have an edition of 200 of their materials, and that's what this one is. And this opens up like a window shutter that opens out this way, and then the book's inside here. So you can see the two covers that have opened up, which is an unusual closure for a book. And it ties with the yarn there. And these are dried leaves. They have a patio, and in most tropical climates, there are often patios around the inside of the house, and that's true in Ediciones Vigía building as well, and there's a patio there. They use that patio for poetry readings, for plays for children, and also where they do their work. So they take corrugated cardboard, and you'll see this later on. They wet down the corrugated cardboard and tear off one layer of it so they get that ripple stuff, you know, that's in the middle of the corrugated cardboard. And they use that for part of their design. So you'll see one later where they've done this. I think they're very inventive in how they do their design. This down here, that's mud. A real preservation problem, but it's a beautiful, it's a very creative use of their art. Let's look at that. It's a book called Replicas, and I wanted to show you how this is also on my website. That's the front and the back of the book, and if you put the two of them together, you can see how this body just is floating across the back into the front of the book. It's a very strange book with strange poetry. Jose Kozer was born in Cuba, but now lives in New York City, and he teaches at Queens College. He teaches literature. This is the first book of his. He's published many books, but this is the first book of his that was published in Cuba. And so he was very, very pleased to be able to have this published in Cuba. Only now are his writings beginning to be read in Cuba because they have been, they've been unavailable. And this is the inside of that book. Here, the shirt opens out and with his name inside on the front cover. This is a really, really thin tissue paper. Again, it's like a wrapping paper like you would wrap up Christmas presents with. It's very, very fragile and tears very easily. And they use that to good effect, both on mounting. This is black tissue paper that they've glued down to the bagasse. And here, this red is a crepe paper that is fast losing its color. So we keep that one out of the sun. This is one of my favorites. I think the artistry in this book, this is a woman artist, and she's one of my favorites of the ones that I have been able to collect. And this is the back. You can see this hair of this woman on the back. And again, almost on almost all of the backs of all of the books are is the lantern and the vajilla. Now, they publish in editions. I talked about the Revista. That's a journal that's published quarterly. They also publish children's books, a children's magazine, and children's poems. And then they also have other series, so a poetry series or scholarly series. And they do this so that they come out in a regular fashion, as well as just single issues. In the backs of all the books, there's a colophon that says who the illustrator is, who the author is, or the editors. And then they also have a list of all of the assemblers. So everyone gets credit. I often say that this was the most communist institution of all the places that I visited in Cuba, because indeed, of course, the ideal for communism is that everyone is equal. And you see that more in Ediciones Vigia publications than I saw anywhere else in Cuba, because they give recognition to everyone, both the people who are gluing down the little pieces of paper as well as the artists. And within the group, you might be the author for one publication, and then for another one, you would be an assembler. And so you sit, even though you were the author of one book, for another edition, you glue down pieces just like everyone else, so that they all take turns having their moment of glory. Let's look at another one. This is the inside of that book. Again, I think wonderful artistry. And these are like the beginning of a new chapter in the book where they put in the artwork, and she holds that idea of the hair all the way through, as well as around here that you see. Well, I have another one of her books. This is signed by the author. Gisela was, when I was last in, in 1999 when I was in Cuba, I had the opportunity to work with the Ediciones Vigia folk and helped to assemble some of the books. I worked on the one that they were working on at that time. And Gisela, who is the poet for this particular book, was an assembler at that time. So I got to sit next to her, more or less. And we were gluing down little half moons, little half silver moons that would stick to your finger. And you would try and get it off your finger and get it stuck on the book. And it was just the hardest thing to do. But this one Gisela had, it was one of the ones that she had gotten in payment for her writing, and she sold it to me and signed it. So this one we have in our collection and is signed by the author. And Violeta Naranjo is the artist, the same artist as from the previous book. Let's look at the next one. This one I just wanted to show you the inside. This is that little hat repeated again. And then these hands, you can see how the hands are clasped here right at the page number. I just think that amount of detail is exceptional, so I wanted to point it out. Let's look at the next one. This is a story of Dolly. The Cubans are known for their good medical. All people in Cuba get to attend school and go through as far as they can for their education, and there are many doctors. And in fact, the medical attention in Cuba is one of the best in Latin America. It's not always available for the Cubans themselves, but many Latin American people go to Cuba to have heart surgery and to have plastic surgery because they are known for their good doctors. And this is the story of a doctor, and it was actually written by her, a Cuban doctor who went to Africa to serve. And of course, there were a number of African countries where they did exchanges with Cuba, communist countries, and where the Cubans were helping them, training them both to fight and also to help with medical. And this is the story of Dolly, who's a little African girl who works in the hospital where this Cuban doctor lives, works. And the Cuban doctor takes a shine to Dolly, and she calls her Dolly because she can't pronounce her African name. So she nicknames her Dolly. And she gets to know Dolly a little bit, and Dolly's is very sad one day, and the doctor asks her, you know, what's the matter? And she said, well, I've been promised in marriage, and I'm not going to be able to keep working at the hospital and learning how to be a nurse because I have to go in and marry this man because my family has given me away to this man to marry. And so the doctor talks with her, and she says, oh, it won't be so bad, you know, you'll get to know him, you'll like him, I'm sure it won't be so bad. And the young Dolly is really quite heartbroken. The Cuban doctor goes back to Cuba. She continues to write letters to Dolly and to communicate with her. She never hears anything back from Dolly, and she wonders about that. And time goes by, and finally she gets back. She gets a package from Cuba, and it's all the letters that she's written to Dolly. And Dolly's never seen any of them because she committed suicide the night before she was to be married. She really didn't want to be married. It's a very sad story, but the whole design of this book is of these postcards, and you can see here this return to sender here, and that's the story. It's being returned to the Cuban doctor, and this is the postcard of Dolly, and here where her heartstrings are tied to the doctor and not to the man she was to marry. Let's look at the next one. This is one of the children's books. There's a whole series of children's books. As I mentioned before, one of the things that's very important to Ediciones Vigía is to publish children's books, and both the writings of the children's and to have the children illustrate. And part of that is because children's books are very, very hard to get a hold of in Cuba. Because of the shortage of paper, there really aren't very many children's books. When I was in Cuba the first time in 1998, I met some American educators who were traveling and who were quite taken by the fact that Cubans worked so hard to have children memorize, and they thought this was a wonderful way to teach grade school children, and they were going to take this idea back to the United States. And as I talked to these people, I was a bit amazed by their innocence, I guess. And I said, well, you know why they emphasize memorization so much in the primary schools. And she said, no, why? And I said, well, because they don't have any books. They don't have any books in the classroom. And so that's how they teach the children, is through memorization, because they don't have the books that the kids can then take home. So they memorize everything. And so Ediciones Vigía works very hard to publish children's books. They have puppet shows. They have theater. They have kite contests. And they also use the art then of the children. And this is one of the books that was signed by Lara. This was one of her son's art pieces. So you can see how the little doors open up, and then this gauze lifts up and then the poetry starts, or the play starts. Let's look at the next one. This is the back. This is the back of that. See how that little boy's climbing over, and we saw the front part, and his leg was over the side. Again, I just think it's wonderful detail. This is a banner. And this is a poem called The Ugly Things. And one of the things that Ediciones Vigía does is that they travel to Spain and to different places in Cuba to work with children, to help them with bookmaking and help them with their creative design of writing poems and plays and things. And what they teach is using recycled materials. And in fact, one of the directors from Ediciones Vigía, who is a friend of Ruth Bahar's, who teaches at the University of Michigan, and she was able to bring him to the United States for a meeting, and then to stay for a while in Ann Arbor. And he taught a bookmaking class in a junior high in Ann Arbor, using this poem, The Ugly Things, talking about recycled materials. And I actually bought a copy of that book in Cuba, but it had been made in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which I thought was a pretty interesting happenstance. Let's look at the next one. This is another one. You can see that corrugate cardboard here that they've used to do the decorating of this children's series. This is one of the revistas. So it's like a magazine, a children's magazine. And they've all of these have been individually attached to the front cover. One of the things that's quite wonderful is every time I've been down, that I've been able to go to Cuba, I always take a big suitcase full of art materials. I take good paper, I take yarn, I take glue, I take colored pencils, I take acrylic paints, anything that I think, I take fabric sometimes, anything that I think that they can use in their book structures. Once I had heard about them even before I had gone down the first time, and so even in 98, which was my first visit, I took materials just to give to them. And so they've come to expect me to come and visit. I always buy as many of the books as I can, and I always bring them some materials. And one of the things that was perhaps the most satisfying in my last trip was that I saw some materials that had been used in the design of the books from things that I had brought them the previous visit, so I could see how the colored paper that I was bringing to them was now being used in their designs, and also yarn. I took them a lot of yarn. Most of the things that I took were not particularly mine, but had been donated by other book artists who had seen these. I have shown these in a number of different places, and it's heartening that the book artists here in the United States want to be involved with these people and want to help them with their supplies. So they send me any number of things to take down. Let's look at the next one. This is the last set of slides I have. This is the streetway in Matanzas, just around the corner from Ediciones Bahia. And here is the center, the salon, with some of the people from the first visit. This is Aaron, who had the cigar book, Joanne Cavanaugh, who was a journalist who wrote several articles about Ediciones Bahia, and then some of the people who worked there. And this is my stack of wrapped books that I had purchased, and they're all wrapped up in this brown bagasse paper. Ediciones Bahia is changing a little bit. They have their first computer now, and when I last visited them, they were telling me about how very pleased they were that they had enough money to buy their own computer. They said, you know, we're so happy to have these donations, but we stand just a little bit higher and a little bit straighter when we can, and a little more proud when we can buy our own computer and think about producing books from the work of our own hands. So I hope to go down again next year. I'll probably go down in May, and we'll see them again, and I'm hoping to buy more materials that they have produced. So that's the end of the slides. I have books here that you can look at. I ask that you come up and look at them, but not to handle them. These are the materials that I have donated to Special Collections. I love these books very much, but I also wanted to allow others, people to see them and to enjoy them. And one of the things that we did was we framed them this is the way we are storing them, or in acid-free boxes, but because they have so many little attachments to them, we created these holders for them. So they come out so people can look at them, and they've been countersunk in these acid-free corrugate board. All of these is a wonderful design, similar to the one that was used at the Library of Congress, and we have a wonderful volunteer who works in our book repair lab named Dorothy McMeekin, and she did all of these for us. It's almost like they're framed even in their cases. Are there any questions I can answer for you? Yeah. Right. Well, I feel very fortunate to have been able to travel there.
Yeah, I know so little, and I'm just curious, are there any particular themes that really pop out in your literature that you write about?
Well, a lot of them talk about death and sadness, things that are lost, such as the beginning piece that I quoted. And because there are sad times, certainly, but they also, the Cuban people are a very resilient people and are very inventive. And I think these books are a testament to that inventiveness. But the themes, I would say that they're all over the map. In terms of what they're writing about, they do scholarly. I mean, they write scholarly treatises that look like this. I mean, you wouldn't think that would be a scholarly research, but they are. They do the children's series, and that's very important to them. And they do puppet shows and that sort of thing. But that's in support of the community. They really want to publish what they want to publish. They want that creativeness, and they feel that is very important to their well-being, to their very life, that creative energy that they have with their writing. And so that's why they go to all of this trouble to create these works of art, as I think of them. They don't see their books as works of art. They expect that they will be used and will fall apart. It is the nature of using something, you know, and loving a book. When you love a book and you read it over and over again, it wears out. And so they would expect that to happen with their materials. I'm trying to keep them so that they don't wear out. Yeah. Well, that's a good question, and I usually talk about that. I'm sorry I forgot about that this time. There's a committee, and they that's made up of the dozen people, and they divide up in different committees to decide on who they'll use and how they'll match. But also then the winners of the award, like the Rilke Prize for poetry. So they work together as a group. It really is a community, and they really while there is a director who exhibits a certain amount of control, in general, it's a group process, both for the production of the books and for the choices of what gets published. So they really are a community that work together. The one thing they're not a community about are their scissors. Everybody who had a good pair of scissors, they kept it close to them, and they took it home with them and brought it back the next day. I took scissors that they just don't. Again, it's a tropical climate, so things rust very easily. And if they had a good pair of sharp scissors, boy, they hung on to it. That was the only thing I didn't see them sharing. And I took scissors down to them the last time I went down, and the really fine pointed ones, so they could do all of this detail with the cutting. And boy, they were just, I feel like I'm friends for life with the people who got those scissors. Yeah. Not that I know of, because of the embargo. Actually, there was a because of the embargo, we don't bring things in to Cuba. But in fact, there was a Supreme Court ruling that it had to do with Cuban posters, and they said that for freedom of information, that any printed literature should you should be allowed to bring that into the United States from Cuba. And in fact, that has been that was the ruling. And so, while I do get stopped by the customs people for some things that I bring in, they don't say anything about the books, and I can spend as much money as I want on the books in Cuba. Americans are limited to $100 to bring from Cuba into the United States of something like cigars or rum or coffee or something like that. But in terms of the books, because it's printed literature and because of the Supreme Court case, I can spend as much money as I have on the books and can bring all of that into the United States. But it is difficult to bring things in.
How did the Cuban people receive the literature as a book? Like you're saying, obviously there's a lot of foreign people
Buying the books?
Yeah, right.
I asked Laura about this the last time I was there, and probably over half of any edition is sold to Cubans, and less than half goes to tourists. So when you consider that $20 of American dollars, which is what a revistus costs, such as this, I think I paid $20 for this, that would feed your family for considerable amount of time in Cuba, that a Cuban would spend those American dollars on literature, I think says something very meaningful about the value of literature to Cubans. So yeah, they are scattered around all over Cuba.
So are they required to purchase in U.S. dollars, or maybe they
Oh, you know, that's a good question, Mary Jo. I don't know. I mean, I always have to pay in American dollars, but even if I have Cuban pesos, it may be that they sell to the Cubans in Cuban pesos. That is possible. Because Cubans are paid in Cuban pesos, but there are some things in Cuba that you can only buy with dollars, such as medicine and other things, sometimes shoes. Oftentimes you can only buy with American dollars. So, but you may be right. It may be that they sell to the local market in Cuban pesos, which would be easier for the Cubans to have. Yeah, Stephanie. It depends upon what their supplies are, how many they're going to publish, and it depends upon how many pieces there are to how long it takes to assemble it. They were publishing more than the government in the early years of the 80s, and they were publishing 8 or 9 titles in a year. Now that they have their computer, they may be able to publish more than that. I don't know. So, and it varies for the year whether or not they can get paper and supplies. Yeah. The limit there is the poundage. You can carry 60 pounds of luggage with you when you go to Cuba. Anything over 60 pounds, you have to pay an additional cost for that. I've been very fortunate when I've gone down, because I've often been over in poundage and they have not charged me. I also have been able to ship, I have a license to ship. I get a license to travel down there from our government, but you can also get a license to send materials down. And I have been able to do that twice, and have sent the first time about $10,000 worth of materials. Not for the book artists, these were for the libraries and the archives and the National Archives in Cuba, and I sent down about $10,000 worth, and I have another shipment that's going down, and it goes by boat. It goes from the United States up to Canada, and then from Canada it gets put into a shipping container and put on a boat, and then it comes around and goes down to Cuba. So it takes months and months to get any of that done. A shipment left the second week in June of this year, which was a wonderful donation of a conservation lab, as well as other supplies of papers and things like that that I had raised. And that is now in customs in Havana, and it'll probably be in customs for a couple of months, and then it'll be released, and the people will be able to get it. So there are ways to send materials down to Cuba. But for the book artists, I have always just carried things. I'll take a suitcase that weighs 40 or 50 pounds and lug it down. Yeah. Oh, that's a good question too, because they do come and go. I think all told there are, well, I haven't checked all of the names, and that would be one way to do it. We don't have any editions that are from the 80s. So I don't have the list of the assemblers that would be there that you could see. But there's actually a fairly stable core of group of about 8 people who have been there for a very long time, and then there are others who come and go. Sometimes there's a college in Matanzas, and so they get artists there, because one of the degrees that you can get in the school there is in art, and that's where Ariel got his degree. And some of those people come in as students. at the university and contribute their artwork and then go off somewhere else to do it. So I would say that there are probably 30 to 40 have been there since 85, and there's a core of 8 to 10 who have been there for either from the very beginning or have been there for a very long time. Well, in Cuba, everyone is entitled to a salary because that is the communist way. So everyone gets a ration book for food, and everyone gets a certain amount of Cuban pesos depending upon what your job is. But you don't always have to go to your job, even though you're getting paid to go to a job and to work. People don't always do that, and so they would go instead to go to work at Ediciones Vigia when they're maybe 2 or 3 days a week, and then they'll go to their government job the rest of the time. So they don't get paid. I mean, they do get paid because everybody gets paid in Cuba, but they don't get paid for making these books except by being paid with a number of the books that they can then sell for whatever price they can get for them. It's a very interesting process, and it's very obvious when you work with these people how much they love what they're doing. It really is, each one of these books really is a work of love. Yeah. There's one on Italian theater, and I don't have that book here, but it's actually in the shape of a theater, and it has a curtain that lifts up so that you can see the stage. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful book, and that's the research of the Italian theater that had been performed in Matanzas at the opera house. They have one of the best opera houses in all of Cuba is in Matanzas that is still... They do. They have footnotes in them, and they... Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in fact, some of the books that are illustrated by children are scholarly works. We have one that's on my website that's not here that's illustrated by a child, but is a scholarly work about the history of puppets. It is a scholarly work. So they do have footnotes. Most of the books now have ISBN numbers, which is interesting. I do. I expect that, for example, this Pushkin could very well have been, some of the design might be by the computer. And you can see a difference as you look at the texts. The earliest texts were from typewriters on these, on stencils and typewriters, and the print is real uneven, in some cases hard to read. And now the type is much, much better. Let me find one that's, so for example, this one. If you look at the printing on that, could easily have been computer generated. This is one of the newer ones. And in fact, this yarn was some yarn that I took down to them in 99. I was just gonna look at the text on this. This is probably computer generated. It's a nice clean text. It's very even, as opposed to a typewriter where the striking of the typewriter is uneven because some of the keys haven't been cleaned or whatever. So they are changing even now, and I think it'll be very interesting to see what new things that they're doing the next time I go down. Because every time I go down, I see something different of what they're doing. Theoretically, that would be possible at some point. You can have, there are some websites for Cuba. They are all government ones right now. For example, the National Archives or the Institute of Cuban History has a website. Web access is very much restricted in Cuba, is mostly in official offices, and only certain people are allowed to use the web to look outside. Obviously, in a communist country, one of the things that the government does is control the amount of information that can come into the country, and that is still continuing. That's harder and harder to do because as people take computers down, I took a 400 megabyte hard drive down in my backpack last time I went down and just gave it away, and I took a modem down. So anybody who has a phone line theoretically could hook up to a modem and could and could get out onto the web. Most of the email goes through a router, and they do check the emails. When I was in Cuba and I sent email to my husband to let him know I was okay and that sort of thing, the message was edited. So somebody is reading the emails and either lets stuff go out or doesn't let it go out, depending upon what's there. I don't know how much that happens, but I know that it happens some. But certainly, I've been able to now, Ediciones Vigia does have an email address, and I do communicate. I have been able to communicate with them via email. It's not real reliable, but it's more reliable than any other means that I have to communicate with them. Well, thank you. You all have been a wonderful audience. If you want to come up and look at some of these pieces, feel free to. And they will, and they are, of course, all available in special collections. And there is a bibliography that I put here about some articles that have been written about Vigia.